Buck, we are to number 10, deer general seasons and special permits. This is also a decision.
Good morning, Chair Carpenter, other members of the commission, director and deputy director. So I'm Brock Hanus, deer and elk section manager. I think I'm here today to present 11 or 12 WACs, but the first three that I'm going to get started with are related to deer general seasons, deer special permits, and carcass importation. So at our March meeting, we were still waiting on our harvest data estimates to come in, and so just to give you guys an update, those results are in. These are our final estimates that are based on both compliant and non-compliant reports. 2018, we saw a little uptick from our harvests in last year statewide. General seasons, we're in second year of a three-year package. We didn't propose any major changes for black-tailed deer or mule deer. As we'll talk about a little bit more, that's not the case for whitetail. For permit seasons, quality special permits were adjusted through the special permit allocation process, and we adjusted our antlerless special permits up or down depending on our management goal. A little bit more specifically, we propose to add 5 days to the general early archery whitetail deer season in GMUs 169 and 175. That's down in the Blue Mountains. We propose to add early antler general season opportunity for muzzleloader hunters in GMU 621 out on the Olympic Peninsula. We propose to add late general season antlerless opportunity for muzzleloader in GMU 667. That's in Western Washington. We propose to remove the late general season muzzleloader opportunity in Deer Area 6020, and that's up around Squim. We propose to retain the late general muzzleloader season for black-tailed deer in GMU 654. We propose to reduce quality archery and modern permits in GMUs 382, 388, 578, and 574, and that was in response to declines that we had seen in that local mule deer population. And we propose to increase modern firearm buck permits in GMU 284, which is out in the Columbia Basin around Ritzville. So specific to District 1 white-tailed deer, as we've kind of touched on a little bit already today, we propose substantial changes to white-tailed seasons in District 1. Just as a little bit of a reminder, the season setting process begins in early winter before we even have harvest data to kind of guide that. And so one of the things that we use in that district is we have long-running check stations where hunters come in, and one of the values of those check stations is that's our first chance to get that feedback from hunters, and we value that opportunity. And in our initial steps in developing our recommendations is using that feedback. And so during those check interactions at check stations, we were hearing from hunters that it didn't seem like deer numbers were where they were. It seemed like hunter success was a little bit lower. And so based on that initial feedback, we recommended substantial reductions in antlerless permits for whitetail deer in District 1. We developed those proposals, we put them online, and in that process, we received numerous comments that were in opposition to that. They wanted to see further reductions. That was further echoed at the March meeting, which we all remember very well. The common themes that we heard from our constituents were concerns regarding the status and decline of white-tailed deer populations, specifically in District 1. They were advocating for eliminating antlerless deer harvests, and they were advocating for reinstating antler point restrictions. Again, we value that feedback, and in response to that feedback, we brought to the March meeting a recommended adjustment of eliminating all antlerless harvests for white-tailed deer in District 1. During that meeting, like I said, we heard a lot of folks advocating for reducing buck harvest. Some of the ways that might be considered or achieved would be antler point restrictions, shortening season lengths for antler deer, and eliminating late season opportunities. I think the commission even proposed that we consider those options moving into the April meeting. But ultimately, we did not move forward with any further recommendations to reduce buck harvest. Primary reasons are the number of bucks has not been shown to affect productivity until ratios are in the single digits. Our buck to doe ratios have consistently been 25 to 30 per 100 in District 1. Another thing that we heard echoed at the March meeting was discussion about folks observing second and third ruts and observing fawns that were very small in August. What I would like to kind of bring forward today is that that's actually very common in white-tailed deer populations, especially ones that are on a high nutritional plane. I grew up in Missouri, in the Midwest, in the eastern states. The second rut happens in January, and those are the fawns of that year that are coming into estrus. And so it does not surprise me that we had hunters that testified that they were observing late rutting activity. Even with majority of those populations having young bucks, that's going to happen. Even if they were mature bucks, that's going to happen because of those young females coming into estrus.
Commissioner Smith.
Yeah, just a quick question. Are you seeing a number of dropping of twins or triplets? Has that been increasing?
So in white-tailed deer, twins is very common. I don't know what specific data we have on that. I think some of that is going to come out. I know we have some historical data where past biologists would go to the DOT where they would dump carcasses that get hit on the highway, and they actually were using that data to try to look at conception dates, and so there might be some information we can use there. I know Woody had some historical studies, and then obviously the predator-prey study that we're doing now, they're going to be looking at that, and so I don't have those numbers. If you were to ask me what's it going to be, I would say average is going to be twins. That's very common in whitetail.
In a healthy population.
Yeah, I mean, just normal and whitetail. I mean, that's what kind of sets whitetail apart right. from blacktail and mule deer. The reproductive potential is just so much higher than those other two subspecies of deer.
Thanks.
To continue, so we did implement antler point restrictions 2011 to 2014, and we didn't observe any biological effect. Now, I will concede that to really look at this, you know, what the effects of antler point restrictions are, we probably need to be collecting teeth off of harvested bucks. So right now, all we had to go off was what number of antler points. We had some survey data to look at buck-to-doe ratios and then our fawn-to-doe ratios. And based on the information that we did have, we didn't see any difference between – we didn't see an increase – in either one of those metrics, and there really wasn't an appreciable difference between the GMUs where we implemented antler point restrictions and those that we didn't.
So could I just know?
Commissioner Thorburn.
Yeah, so we do collect teeth, though, at the check station, so we have a little bit of that data, but of those data, but it's just a selected sample.
It's a selected sample. The other thing I do want to do, I think we need to do a little bit more work on this and research. And one of the things that I do want to do is we haven't had mandatory teeth collections for quite some time, but we do allow hunters to submit their teeth because a lot of hunters are interested in, you know, how old was my deer that I harvested? So we do have a pretty large bank. That we could go and just take a look at and say, you know, what proportion of those bucks that are 4-point, what proportion are 3-year-olds, what proportion are 2, what proportion are yearlings. So definitely want to look into that more as we move forward. The harvest data that we had did indicate that the antler point restrictions resulted in a 35% decline in both hunter numbers and harvest. Antler point restrictions are not universally supported by hunters in Washington. And so as we move forward on this issue, and if it's going to be considered, it needs to be vetted through an extensive public review process. And I've done a little bit of legwork in reviewing what other states. I've kind of been out of the whitetail world for quite some time. They are very popular, very common in Midwestern, Eastern states.
Point restrictions,
and it's mostly a social issue. There's very little work that's been done to look at the biological effects, and most hunters will support it in those states, but it's not 90%. It seemed like the number is usually in that 60 to 65% support.
Chair Carpenter, if I could just, we discussed this quite a bit this morning in the Wildlife Committee, and are in agreement. And thank you for kind of introducing it. We certainly hear the support for it from many of our constituents, but agree that it is not universally supported, and it is one of those issues that needs to be carefully vetted. So we're thank you for the work that's already been done, and we're in support of moving forward carefully, but hearing the support for it and understanding it, both whatever is known biologically, but recognizing the social importance as well.
Yeah, and the only other thing that I would point out is that when you look at a lot of the states that have implemented this in the Midwest and East, 85% of their harvest was yearlings, and most of those were spikes or 2-point. If you look at our harvest data over the last 10 years in District 1, 48%, an average 48% have been 4 or 5-point bucks. And so it's not an apples-to-apples comparison in what they're trying to achieve.
If I could just add, also for a couple of the commissioners who weren't here, it's a different management that goes on in those states as well. Those are the quality deer management states. And we heard from quality deer management biologists, and one of the takeaways for me is we're very different, just environmentally, habitat-wise, and everything. So, I think our whitetail hunters there's a lot of talk in the hunting literature that is QDM kind of approach. I took away from it that's not entirely applicable to our situation. So,
it's very different.
Yeah.
So with that, we propose to eliminate all general season antlerless whitetail deer opportunities in GMUs 101 to 121.
Hold on, Brock, please. Commissioner Smith?
I'm going to get into this, but chronic wasting, is that, did that factor into, or where are we at on that?
So right now, we're still CWD-free.
Is it in Montana?
It's in Montana. So it's knocking on the doorstep. And one of the interesting things I did find and looking at what other states are doing with antler point restrictions. So Pennsylvania actually has their co-op unit looking at, because they have CWD, and some of the more current research on CWD is showing that mature male bucks are more likely to be carriers or, be susceptible to the disease. And so now they're looking at what could potentially be the consequence of promoting a population that has more mature bucks in it. Does that possibly create an issue from a CWD management? On the flip side, they're also looking at it from the perspective of you're protecting a lot of the spikes now, and or a lot of the yearlings. 70% of yearlings in the Midwest disperse away from where they're born, and so they're looking at that from a CWD perspective as well. So if you have this component of the population that is actually more likely to take off and move to a new area, and if they're CWD positive, what ramifications does that have versus if you had the traditional harvest rate of 85% of those animals being harvested, would that actually reduce your potential for spreading CWD through your state? Again, those are kind of modeling exercises that they're going through, but it's questions that folks are starting to ask. And unfortunately, there's a lot of unknowns around all that. So the other one was proposed to eliminate all antlerless whitetail deer special permit opportunities in GMUs 101 through 21. So with that, I'll take any questions. I think we've covered quite a few already. Are there any more?
Mr. Baker.
In Spokane, we obviously heard that whitetail were severely depressed, according to the people who were talking to us. They also mentioned that mule deer were, like, non-existent. Nobody sees a mule deer anymore. Are we looking into that?
Not specifically, no. I think my impression on the mule deer numbers up in northeast Washington is it's somewhat debatable. So definitely in the western part of that district. So as you move west and get into 101, you start to see more mule deer. There is a long-standing debate between competition, around competition between whitetail and mule deer within the deer world. Some of your true mule deer biologists, I mean, they contend strongly that whitetail are the vermin of deer in the West, and they need to be, you know, suppressed because they will move into an area and they will outcompete mule deer. The truth is there's really no strong biological studies that show a cause and effect relationship. I suspect up in the Northeast, it's very similar. I don't think we have a strong handle on what were the mule deer numbers relative to whitetail historically up there. And I don't think that's going to change anytime in the near future. Maybe there are steps you could take if the public really wanted that to shift to a more heavily dominated mule deer population. Maybe there's things you could try to do to promote that. But right now, I don't see that changing.
Mr. Thorburn.
Slide 2, your graph, it's all deer. How does it look with whitetail if you did the harvest? Was there also an uptick?
No, I think so. Our whitetail harvest is dominated in District 1 and Region 1, and there was a decline. And so we split this out on whitetail. I haven't looked at it specifically, being honest with you, but I would expect that's probably went down a little bit.
Thank you.
Are there any questions from the commission? This is a decision as well.
I move to adopt WACS 220-413-030, 220-415-020, and 220-415-030 as presented, and to thank staff for the antlerless change in District 1. I think it's responsive to our concerns.
Second that.
We have a motion and a second. Any further questions? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Brock, don't go anywhere. You're up again a couple times.
Yeah, like I said, I think I have 11 or 12 today. So
you are now on 11. Hunting
yep.
Boundaries and equipment. This is also a decision.
Oh, we have one more whack associated with that, which is the importation and retention of dead non-resident wildlife. So this is the CWD related to specifically. And so one of the primary intentions is to reduce the risk of chronic wasting disease entering Washington. And so, as I mentioned, to date, we're CWD-free, but in recent months, the state of Tennessee has detected CWD in wild free-ranging deer, and so in March, we proposed to add the state of Tennessee to the list of states and provinces in this WAC.
Mr. Holzbiller.
This one's hitting a little home. Importing in from Canada, I'm going moose hunting, so hopefully we import a moose. But now they need to be boned, right?
Yes, I'd have to go and...
It'd be out of the Yukon is where it's coming from.
I'd have to go and look, but
where so... Where does a guy go and look?
So in our pamphlet, so it we don't just say all of Canada.
Okay.
We identify the provinces is in Canada. So
I can find lots of ways to get into trouble. I don't need to do this one, okay?
Yeah, it's in the pamphlet.
What's that?
I say we've experienced.
Yeah.
So yeah, we list them in. Yeah, it's in. Yeah, so the specific states and provinces are listed in the WAC and then that's replicated in the pamphlet. So we have a whole page in the pamphlet that tells you the areas that apply, and then tells you what you need to do to that carcass before you bring it in.
So I jumped the gun, and I think we already adopted this rule.
Sorry.
Can we take a second run at this particular WAC on a separate motion?
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm asking Bill. First he said no, then he shrugged his shoulders.
He doesn't care.
Okay, well, take it away, please.
Okay. I move to adopt 220-413-030 as presented.
Second again.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Thank you.